Welcome to the Incomparables Cast of Us. It is me, Brian Hamilton, and my co-host, Ben McCarthy. How you doing, Ben?
Very good.
Amazing. This is episode zero. We have just decided to do the show. The show airs on HBO in about a month, and we figured we would come together to talk about our expectations for the show, our experience with the video game, and just the transition from video game to show, what that's going to mean for us, and just kind of, you know, begin the conversation here on The Incomparable. How's your day been, Ben? What have you been up to?
So far, all very good. I've watched the trailer once again in preparation for this, and I am bristling with excitement.
How many refugee childs have you shuttled across the nation in the last few weeks or so?
My lawyer advises me to say zero.
Ben, what was your first experience with the video game?
That's a good question. I was trying to remember this in the preparation for our show, and I don't remember being particularly excited for the game before it came out. It was definitely, you know, it was one of those games, it was on my radar, and there was certainly a bit of hype around it, but I kind of, you know, it sort of just came out, and I was like, oh yeah, I'll give that a shot. That seems good. I've heard good things, and dove into it and just immediately got hooked from, you know, the first scene, the prologue of the game. Yeah, and just really immediately fell in love with it. I tore through it my first playthrough. It's one of those games, it's impossible to put down once you get started.
Was this back in 2013 when it hit the PS3, or was it sometime after, maybe on PS4?
Yeah, no, this was on the PS3. Could have been right at launch. I don't remember specifically, but I definitely played it early on, before hearing any spoilers or anything. So I got a good first experience.
This was one of the few games of that year, 2013, where I remember spoilers were a huge deal. People were like, do not talk about Last of Us anywhere. This is a game I've been anticipating and waiting for years and years. And like you, I was kind of there like, oh, interesting, zombie game. I played Jack and Daxter for hours and hours and hours, days and days as a kid. I loved that game, and I didn't put two and two together that this was those developers until I realized, oh, it's the same people that made Uncharted. Wait a second, didn't they make Jack and Daxter? Oh my god, and the Jack and Daxter devs made A Last of Us.
And they made Crash Bandicoot as well.
And Crash Bandicoot. That's one I didn't come to until very recently when it was included in the PS5 collection. Of the other Naughty Dog properties, do you think that any of them could be made into a TV show? Uncharted excluded, because that's a movie, I guess.
Uncharted, yeah, is the obvious one because it plays out like a movie. Crash, I don't think so. I mean, it's kind of just too weird. It's such a video gamey video game. There's no real narrative to most of the games other than like, you need to get to the end and then the world is saved, but not really through your actions. Just that's how it is. Jak and Daxter, I've never played them seriously. I know I've played a couple of them, like, you know, dip my feet into them, but I don't know that I've ever finished any of them, so I'm not the person to weigh in on those.
They were my favorite games growing up because I loved Super Mario 64 and those kinds of 3D platformers so much that, like, Crash Bandicoot was fine and good, but it was so rigid and locked in compared to Super Mario 64, which was, like, my golden benchmark for all video gaming. And as games went on over time, both Uncharted and Last of Us kind of did the over-the-shoulder prestige video game camera angle that really didn't lend itself very well to traditional gamers. I feel like a lot of people came back into gaming when The Last of Us hit, and it was such a blockbuster, you know, mega hit for the time, and it brought people back into, oh, video games can tell really big, beautiful stories, and it's an interesting thing for me to come back to after so many years of not playing. Maybe the last game someone played was Mario Sunshine or something so many years before, because back in 2013, three games came out in the same year. Last of Us, BioShock Unlimited, and Grand Theft Auto 5. And it is shocking to me that in the time since all of those games came out in the same year, and there was like the most heated game of the year discussion I think I've ever seen, Grand Theft Auto 5 has continued getting update after update after update, and it's been the same game for about 10 years. Well, not quote-unquote same game, but same entry in the series
for 10
years. And
they continue selling new copies on each new console.
Exactly. I saw a tweet that was, PlayStation 2 had 3 Grand Theft Autos, whereas Grand Theft Auto 5 had 3 PlayStations. It's wild. But then Last of Us has had a blockbuster sequel and a whole remaster, or remake, I guess, in the last year or so. And it's one story being told and expanded over the course of so many different entries in a way that probably brought people back into gaming for the first time since, I don't know, you know, early 2000s, so maybe the last time they played games.
I think you're absolutely right about that. It was certainly a pivotal moment in the discussion of video games as art, video games as storytelling. I think obviously both of us are on the side that yes, video games are of course art and can be used to tell great stories. But to a lot of people, they were, you know, more gimmicky, more childish, not necessarily something to be taken seriously. And The Last of Us was a big step in changing that perception, I think, to a wider audience.
When something this huge and prestige comes out, I feel like it brings a lot of the video games as art or not kind of discussions back into it. And I think the, I guess, big discussion, you know, this is 2013, just a year after The Avengers came out, there is this kind of discussion about whether superhero movies as massive blockbusters are also art and artistic merit, and I believe that they do. Apparently Martin Scorsese doesn't agree, but that's neither here nor there. I feel like The Last of Us, in terms of grand prestige video gaming, is sort of the exception to the rule, where things that are usually this blockbuster in movies tend to be criticized as vapid or franchisey or cookie cutter or anything like that, whereas blockbuster video games tend to have a lot more prestige brought over to them, like recently God of War Ragnarok and The Last of Us, Last of Us 2 especially, I'm excited to talk about that with you, Red Dead Redemption 2. I feel like some of the biggest game releases of the last few years, of the last 10 years since Last of Us came out, have been much more about big prestige blockbuster things, which doesn't really exist in the movie world, which is funny to me that this video game made the transition to movies and TV shows.
I think certainly the big video games that we've seen, the prestige, the AAA, have increasingly skewed darker and more serious. And I think that's probably been a big factor in them kind of being recognized as this now serious art form, this storytelling craft. You know, we're getting less stories about saving the world, defeating the bad guy, and it's much more like interpersonal relationships between characters, dealing with trauma, dealing with, you know, all sorts of personal conflicts.
When you played the first game, did you ever think it could be adapted into a movie or TV show? Did you think they ever would?
Yeah, I think it's pretty easy to imagine The Last of Us as a movie. A series maybe less so at the time. I think that was not something people were really considering. It was like video games get made into movies if they get adapted at all, and they're usually terrible. It's only in the last few years that we've kind of seen that perception shift a bit. There's definitely been some clunkers. I didn't watch the Uncharted movie, but I think it was received pretty mediocre at best. But we've seen things like the Sonic movies kind of have pretty huge mainstream appeal. Obviously for people who aren't into the Sonic games, it's just, hey, it's a recognizable character. It's a well-told story. It's fun. We've got the Mario movie coming up. We've just seen a trailer for that. And while weird, it looks fun. It looks like it's going to be well-made and well-produced and everything. So I think the perception of video game movies as inherently terrible is probably at an end.
I wonder what intense character trauma Mario's going to be dealing with as Chris Pratt going, let's-a go, in the most generic voice possible. I'm excited to talk about that with you as well. Yeah, I
truly
feel like
harrowing plumber stories.
Harrowing Plumber Story was the working title. I have complicated feelings about the franchising and the pandering of these movies. I didn't see the Sonic movie, but then again, I'm also not a Sonic person. Whereas with Mario, that is my bread and butter. That is where I, you know, cut my teeth on gaming. I still love Mario. I still love, you know, Mario Odyssey, Bowser's Fury, all the games that have recently come out on the Switch. And when I saw the Mario movie trailer, I thought, wow, I'm going to love this. I'm going to go at midnight to the cinema to see it. It's going to be a great time, and I know it's going to be a bad movie. But I want to be pandered to for 2 hours with a team of incredible animators hiding Easter eggs for me to find with, like, little references to games or, like, old Mario 3D bit art or whatever it might be. I feel like when there's the, like, Avengersification of Mario and Sonic versus the HBOification of The Last of Us and, you know, to your other point, the other kinds of video game media that has come out and that's been received much better, like The Witcher, like Resident Evil, it's been interesting to see how different game properties have taken this new shift into storytelling on TV and movies in completely different directions.
That's a good point. I think if we look at what we've seen of HBO's Last of Us, you know, the media they've put forward so far, the kind of interviews that Craig Mazin and Neil Druckmann have done, they really don't seem to be dumbing down The Last of Us or trying to give it more mass market appeal or anything like that. They're really just going, this is the game, and we know lots of people aren't going to play the game, so we're making it a show. And there isn't really much more to it than that. They're clear that they're separate things, and, you know, the actors have their own spin on the characters and all that, but they're not trying to go, this needs to be more family friendly or more entertaining or have more jokes. They're just like, we're really proud of this work that we've done, and we want more people to be able to experience it.
There is a sense of prestige that is brought to this project by Craig Mazin, by HBO. Is there any other streaming platform or network that you think would also be a good fit compared to HBO, or maybe even a better fit compared to HBO, or are you happy that's on HBO and not, say, Netflix?
Oh, God, I would be so terrified of Netflix adapting something like this, because, you know, you'll get one season and it'll be not quite what you hoped for, and there will be more jokes, and it'll be a little bit more like Riverdale or Sabrina the Teenage Witch or something, pandering to an audience that you don't quite feel like you fit into, and then they'll cancel it unexpectedly. HBO is definitely a good fit. Apple strikes me as somebody that could pull it off, but it doesn't seem like something they would necessarily want to get into. Amazon, I don't see being a good fit.
In terms of the property itself, I feel like Apple would be a conflict of interest in a way that another, you know, game manufacturer and game console maker purchases the rights for a first party Sony thing to make a TV show on for their proprietary platform. That would be such a weird fit, but
it's a narrative that they don't control.
Exactly. I think from a production perspective, they would do an amazing job, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah, agreed.
It would be a difficult sell logistically.
Yeah, no, I think that makes perfect sense. HBO feels like a good fit. It feels, you know, kind of in line with their darker, more adult, more serious stuff, you know, which is not the only thing they do, but it's definitely a thing they have a reputation for. And they have the budgets to throw at this kind of thing.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think when it comes to the dark grittiness of HBO with the massive budget they tend to give to projects like this, they couldn't have given it to someone better than Craig Mazin, whose previous project for HBO was Chernobyl, a 4-episode masterpiece about one of the grimmest, darkest things that's ever happened in real life, the Chernobyl disaster in the 80s. I loved it. I thought it was brilliant. I haven't seen it since it came out, but boy, howdy, did I love it. And I can't imagine a better person to be brought into The Last of Us to tell a fictional grimdark story with a much larger plot than, say, 4 episodes of characters puttering about, you know, screaming about Romkins.
Yeah, I totally agree. Similarly, I haven't watched Chernobyl since it came out, but it totally has that feel of, you know, post-apocalyptic media. Yeah, as you're watching it, like you feel like the world has ended for these characters, and you kind of watch them struggle to cope with it. And of course, that's what The Last of Us is about, is surviving a post-apocalyptic world. The writing, the production of Chernobyl was obviously incredible from start to finish. I might actually watch it again before The Last of Us series actually starts. But yeah, Craig Mazin seems like he knows what he's doing here. And then, of course, we've also got Neil Druckmann, the director of The Last of Us,
Dr. Uckman.
at the helm. Dr. Uckman. He's at the helm, and it's his baby. I think not that he's going to be overly protective of it, but he understands it probably better than anybody. And I don't think we're going to, it's not one of those cases where you're worried about, like, oh, the studio meddling or the producers being, wanting a certain direction. Like, the people in charge of this were in charge of the game. So, they have no reason to screw it up.
No, you're absolutely right. No reason to screw it up. No reason to put Neil Druckmann's baby into someone else's hands. I'm absolutely also putting on my to-do list to rewatch Chernobyl in preparation for Last of Us. I think that, again, going back to Avengers and Star Wars and movies versus AAA video games, I think people are willing to take bigger risks on AAA video games than they are in the movies. The most controversial Star Wars movie was The Last Jedi, which is probably one of my favorite Star Wars movies. I loved it. And it was controversial because Rian Johnson came in. It was his baby. He's a very, technical and hands-on director with a very defined point of view in so many ways. And a lot of hardcore Star Wars fans who are also very misogynist didn't like it. And I think that's not to, go too far ahead into The Last of Us 2, but I think that's one of the reasons why Last of Us 2 was so had such mixed reviews from the general public, even though reviewers freaking loved it. And I wish that more movies would take the same swings that Last of Us 2 did, but also knowing that Neil Druckmann was involved in Last of Us 1, 2, and the TV show, we know that they're not going to be married to something that is commercially, not commercially successful, that's what I'm looking for, not crowd pleasing in any way necessarily, but it's going to be
Yes,
a
I think
difficult thing to
if there's one
watch.
thing you could describe Neil Druckmann as, it's not afraid to make enemies.
Not afraid to make enemies, absolutely. What else has he done? He's done Naughty Dog things. He did Last of Us, Vice President, just scrolling through his Wikipedia page here. Yeah, just entirely, video games, and then this. Oh, he was an uncredited playtester on What Remains of Edith Finch. Wow, that's an incredible, incredible thing to add to your cap.
That's a good get of your testers, your beta testers.
Have Neil Druckmann as the beta tester. You think he'll test the next Obscura?
Yeah, I mean, that'd be like getting, I don't know, Tim Cook or Craig Federighi onto your app beta.
God, that'd be incredible. When it comes to expectations for the show based on the trailer, is there any particular thing that caught your eye that you are most excited about?
I mean, obviously, the thing that caught my eye is the cinematography. Above all else, the whole trailer is just stunningly gorgeous. It's, cinematography has for TV shows and stuff has really stepped up in the last decade or so. And there's shots in here that are just beautiful. Like, you could print those out and hang them on a wall kind of shots. So that's an obvious one. The characters themselves, I don't know, I don't want to step on your toes. You should speak as well. The characters all look great. They feel like they're their own characters, but they also blend perfectly with the characters we're familiar with from the game. Ellie in particular. Oh, what's the actress's name? I
Bella
have this
Ramsey.
in front of me. Ella Ramsey. Bella Ramsey. Yes, sorry. Bella Ramsey just steps in with so much confidence and charm. I know there's a lot of people who felt like, oh, she doesn't look enough like the character, which is such a stupid, simplistic take on how adaptations should work. But, as soon as you see her speak, as she, as she moves around, that like you just you're sold. She feels like Ellie. In a way that I think everybody should be reassured that the casting is well chosen here. It would be crazy if it wasn't, but I have no reservations at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, Ben, the longer we podcast together, the more you will realize you never have to tell me to talk. It'll happen. Second of all,
That's true.
I agree that Bella Ramsey is making the character her own. I think it is a wonderful step in the right direction to make this show different enough from the video game. It's weird to me that there is criticism that she, quote unquote, does not look enough like the character when the character was originally a very blatant ripoff of Elliot Page back when he was in a game with Willem Dafoe at the time, where his name was all over the marketing of it. There was a lawsuit. There was a lot of stuff that happened back then. And so they took the character design for Ellie and changed it up a little bit to make her look a little bit less like Elliot Page. And I feel like the way that they are moving forward with this in terms of distancing themselves from the original look of the character and the feel of the character works really, really well. I loved Bella Ramsey in Game of Thrones. She was incredible. I think she was one of the kids with Stoneface or whatever it was. But it was a very cool moment to see. Oh, this kind of like in the HBO family of people, we have a bunch of the same actors showing up and just being.
In Game of Thrones, she, I think, killed it every scene she was in. She's this tiny little commander of, a city or a settlement or something, and she looks like she's 10 years old and is butting heads with some of the big characters in that show, and you believe it. She's so confident. She was also in the HBO slash BBC His Dark Materials series. She's a pretty small role in that, which I don't think is necessarily a great performance for her, but I think the character is not particularly well written. Again, it's a small role, so I don't hold that against her or anything. But yeah, it's clear she's definitely in the HBO family.
It's one of those things where you can tell when a performance is bad because of the actor versus the script. And based on how good I got to see her be in Game of Thrones, yes, that sounds like something where the script was not given to her in the
She's definitely
way.
got the ability.
Absolutely. Pedro Pascal as Joel, complicated profession, Mandalorian himself. This is the way, et cetera, et cetera. What do you think of that casting?
It almost feels too good, is sort of my take on it. We see him in the Mandalorian playing a gruff, stoic father figure to Baby Yoda, carrying him around the galaxy. And speaking of, my little cat has just walked in to climb on my
Oh,
desk and say hello.
hello.
He is great in The Mandalorian. Obviously, we don't see his face all that much, which is a shame because he's got a great looking face. But he's great in Game of Thrones as well. I haven't watched Narcos. I know he's in that. He's a great actor. Like, he was announced as Joel, and everyone was just like, oh, yep, that makes sense. No problem there. A few people were just like, oh, but he's not white. Can Joel be not white? And everyone was like, yes, that's fine. And I was like, okay, cool.
It's funny to me that this is the least controversy I have seen about casting a non-white character in an originally white role compared to things like the new Lord of the Rings show or, a lot of other big media franchises where the same decision was made. And Pedro Pascal is so good and so perfect for this role that I think the overlap of love for Pedro Pascal and the surprisingly, I don't want to say progressive because of how they treated Last of Us Part 2, but the people that love this game and this franchise are probably going to be people that accept him with open arms as Joel, not over Troy Baker necessarily. Oh, apparently Troy Baker is in the show. My roommate recognized him. Let me see if I can find him on Wikipedia. Yep, he is. He plays one of the members of one of the members of a group later on in the game that I'm excited to see. I can't believe my roommate clocked him just from that trailer.
I think we also see Ashley Johnson, who was the voice of Ellie in the game, in the trailer. I don't know if you caught her.
Oh
She's
my
holding a
God.
baby. And so the general assumption is that she plays Ellie's mother, who is not a character we ever see in the game.
God, that would be incredible if we get to see her, which is actually very, very poetic if she plays Ellie's mother in the
Yeah,
show.
it's a fantastic choice if that turns out to be true.
Going back to Mario, God, I hope that Charles Martinet has a role in the movie.
And then the other most notable actress in the series, I suppose, is I'm blanking. Tess, who is played
Anna
by
Torv.
Anna Torv. You beat me to it.
Fringe, Mindhunter, a few other things. I don't think I've seen any of these. Stephanie.
You've never watched Fringe?
Never saw Fringe, never saw Secret Life of Us. Yeah, I've never seen her in any of these things.
I was so into Fringe as it was coming out. That was kind of my ongoing series that I, loved, watched weekly as it came out throughout secondary school. Kind of just, it's very J.J. Abrams, lots of kind of lore and backstory and callbacks to itself. Just a fun show. If if you like the X-Files, it's in a similar vein to that.
That's awesome. Yeah, she'll
She's
do an
good. She's
amazing job
just,
as a test.
yeah, she commands a solid presence.
For me, the other person I'm most excited to see is Melanie Lynskey, who I love dearly in Yellow Jackets. And then ever since we saw Yellow Jackets, we learned that she is in literally everything. We did our annual Over the Garden Wall watch last night, and it turns out she is Beatrice, the bluebird. And I had no freaking idea until this year after we had seen Yellow Jackets last year, and oh my God, she's an incredible performer.
It was, yeah, a fantastic show. I've seen her in a couple of things since. She's obviously having her own little renaissance, which is nice. Do we know what role she's playing? Like a new character in this, isn't she?
New character, head of some movement in Kansas City. We'll see what her arc is.
I mean, obviously, the gameplay in The Last of Us, so much of it is very solitary. It's just Joel and Ellie kind of wandering through either abandoned towns, desolate places, or if there are other characters, they're, trying to kill you. So there's not a lot of conversation happening. And obviously the show needs more dialogue, more interaction between characters, so it doesn't feel totally flat, I imagine.
And going back to my original question to you, hey, do you think that there's going to be a movie of this ever, a TV show of this ever back in 2013? I never thought there would be because the video game itself is so close to a movie and so cinematic and so beautiful and so impacting that to make it a filmed story felt moot. Like the gameplay adds something to it that makes it a story unlike anything else. And yet filming it would like take away that extra je ne sais quoi of having this story be something that the player character has to make happen by killing zombies and making other really difficult, terrible decisions that we'll be discussing throughout the run of the show, I'm sure. And I was skeptical when I heard that there was going to be a filmed version of it because I identified so much with Joel as the person who was moving the joystick to make him go around and kill zombies. And yet, having seen this trailer, I have very, very, very high hopes that Pedro Pascal can bring that same level of nuance and relatability that is missing from the fact that you are not active, an active participant in the story by playing it as a video game.
I think the story in The Last of Us is told in kind of two key ways. And the obvious one that we're all very familiar with gaming is in cutscenes. When major plot exposition happens, characters have conversations and big things happen. But then there's also this element which I don't want to say The Last of Us pioneered, but it perfected really, which is these little interactions that happen between the characters as you're playing. As you're walking around an abandoned a derelict coffee shop or whatever, and Ellie says to Joel, like, "What was coffee like?" And you're like, oh God, it's been 20 years since coffee was available to anybody." And so it's those small moments of these characters interacting that fleshes out the world more than the cutscenes do. And you look at those little moments and you're like, oh yeah, that's going to be the heart of a series, isn't it? Like, we can think of the big action set pieces, all those moments, but the series is going to be grounded by all these little interactions, little moments between characters as they just kind of experience the world together.
And a lot of those in the game were optional. You didn't have to do all of those things and open the drawer to find a little coffee coupon to initiate that conversation in order to beat the game. And I think one of the other reasons why I love The Last of Us so much is because I'm a completionist when it comes to character moments. I am not a completionist when it comes to like collecting all the little Firefly, dog tags and things like that. They're fun to find, but dear God, some of them are difficult to find. Whereas the character moments, if there's anything with even the hintest faint of a triangle button to initiate a conversation with Ellie, I went to do it. And you can't do that in TV and movies. There's no like optional bits except for like, I don't know, post-credit scenes now, but that almost doesn't count. I feel like having the player be a part of the story to move it forward is something that made The Last of Us special, and you're absolutely right. Hanging the series on the conversations between these two people and them exploring the world and discovering, you know, who each other are and building this relationship is going to be the crux of the show to make those giant action set pieces with the incredible prosthetics for the clickers. Oh my God. That is going to look extraordinarily cool.
There's so many aspects of adapting a game into live action that is inherently going to leave aspects out. And, you know, that's, you know, obviously for better and worse at times, because there's parts of playing a game that are fun in the moment, but aren't necessarily fun if you're watching somebody else play. And, you know, things like collecting items and crafting can be engaging as you're kind of planning out, like, oh, do I need more health kits or more Molotov cocktails or anything? But it's not particularly engaging to just watch. There's moments like that, and you know how good you are with a gun affects your experience of the game, but that's not going to be something that factors into the story really as it's adapted. And then there are moments as you play the game that again are sort of uniquely gameplay moments in the story. There's one moment in particular which is one of my favorite moments in all of video games, and I don't know if they're going to adapt it because it's not really a narrative moment, it's so well done. But you're playing as Joel. You are walking through this mostly abandoned village. You step through a door, and all of a sudden, your foot is caught in a trap, and you're hoisted upside down. You're hanging from your foot from a noose tied to a pulley on the roof or whatever. And you're like, oh, well, that's not good. Nobody likes to be trapped upside down. And Ellie starts to try and find a way to untie you or cut the rope or something. But as she's doing that, these infected hear what's happened and they start to crawl towards you. And now you have to shoot at them, but you're hanging upside down and your aim is swinging side to side. You're totally thrown off. And it's just one of those moments where you feel totally helpless in a total blind panic as you start to shoot and your accuracy is all over the place and you're going through bullets too fast. And you're like, oh God, am I going to get through this? And then sometimes you don't. Sometimes you die and you're like, oh God, I've got to repeat that. But it's such a viscerally fun but uniquely video game moment. And I'm like, you know, there's no way of adapting that and giving you that same sense of adrenaline, I suppose.
You're right that it's a very video game moment to, you know, have that happen and have that be the impetus for a fight. But something like that where the camera follows a character happens all the time in movies. I just watched Pig the other night for like the second or third time. I love that movie. And the exact same thing happens. Nicolas Cage is punched in the face. He falls to the ground. And tracked with his moment, the camera just like falls with him and the camera rotates and the whole scene changes after he's punched in the face. And it was a really wonderful moment. That happens a lot in movies and it's really, really cool. It is revolutionary for a video game to have that while also letting you play through it and being the reason for you to have a very cool upside down fight. And that's going to be in the show, absolutely, I believe, but it's not going to have the same impact as, oh my God, I'm playing a video game and this thing I see happen in movies is happening now. The other thing is that when you reach a moment like that in a video game, and it's an incredible reveal, an incredible moment, then you have to do a fight. I have found that some of the most frustrating and disappointing moments in video games come when something is revealed, you're in shock, you're in awe, and then you have to fight a boss or something. You have to do a level. And if you keep dying in that level and keep seeing the reveal given to you over and over again in the cutscene or whatever, it really diminishes the
It gets
impact of a
tedious.
story beat had on. Exactly. You're not scared or frightened or shocked anymore. You feel tedious about the twist that Darth Vader was Luke's father in that moment. Like, you know, there's something like, what was it in BioShock Infinite, very late in the game, is a reveal that a character is still alive and they come back as like a ghost boss or something. And it was my favorite twist in the game up to that point. And then I did the boss
And
fight
then you
10 or
keep
12
dying, and you have
times
to
and
watch it
kept
10
dying. It
times.
was awful. I was like, oh, come on. It just like diminished the moment. I guess all my gaming opinions were formed in 2013 when BioShock Infinite and Last of Us came out, but that's something that, again, can't happen in movies. You're not going to lose a level in a movie or a TV show.
No, I mean, like, there certainly have been a handful of movies that play into that kind of form. Edge of Tomorrow is kind of the heralded as one of the great non-video game movies, because it really leans into that experience of like having to repeat elements of a game over and over. But no, I agree with you for the most part.
Anything else you want to add before we get to our mushroom of the week?
Oh yeah, there's definitely a few more things we can touch on. The music in the trailer, I think, is excellent. We have tastes of both Take On Me, played in a kind of slowed down, very somber way, and it's a strange choice for the trailer. It's not what I was expecting at all. It does, of course, feature in the second game, but it's I don't know, a lot sadder than I was expecting. Usually with the trailer, you get it something a bit more exciting and, I don't know, macho maybe. But it's a great choice because it reminds you that this show is, it's weird and it's sad and it's full of feelings. And then I've kind of, I think, lingering throughout the trailer, and then we hear it more prominently at the end, is the guitar by Gustavo Santaolalla. Santaolalla? I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce that. Who did the music for the games. And it's such an integral part of the game's identity is his music, which just it comes up again and again as you play, and it blends beautifully with the game world. And it's poetic. I don't exactly know how to, it's poignant. I don't know, it's part of the game that if you took it away, it would feel so much lesser for it. And the fact that he's come back to be a part of the series has made me overjoyed.
No, same, absolutely. The fact that this is the one thing they're really lifting one for one from the game is bringing back Santaolalla for the score is perfect. Like the any Last of Us property without his music would feel empty. The other thing I wanted to throw in there was that the first game starts off in Boston, which is where I live, Boston, Massachusetts, in the United States. I love it here. It's incredible. And it was wonderful to see, you know, my T stop that I used to go to all the time re-rendered and turned into a zombie infested, you know, outbreak area. That was extraordinarily cool. Apparently, the show is also taking place in Boston. And I learned that they redressed parts of, where's it, Vancouver and Edmonton, Canada to be redressed as Boston, and I will be extremely nitpicky about the specific details.
I
Like, that's not where
expect
the
nothing
Park Street
less.
T stop is.
I suppose the one other aspect of the trailer that we can comment on without getting too much into story spoilers is the infected, which we only get a little taste of, but it's a very good taste.
Tasty.
Tasty mushrooms. Obviously, if you're not familiar, the world of The Last of Us is this post-apocalyptic hellscape 20 years on after this outbreak of a fungal virus that affects the brain. So we're not dealing with like undead zombies, we're dealing with people who have been exposed to this fungus, and it kind of slowly, very slowly takes over their brain and their body. First kind of just making them crazed and aggressive, but then as this fungus continues to take over their body, they develop into what are called clickers, which are these blind zombies that use echolocation to find you. And I think they're one of video game's great enemies. Because they are so human in form, but otherworldly in how they move, how they sound. And the first time you encounter them in this kind of dark subway basement is truly terrifying. And then also at the end, we see one of the bloaters, who are these kind of big, boss-like enemies in the game. And I actually think they're not a major misstep in the game, but they feel a little bit cartoonish in a way that the rest of the world does. And again, the first time you encounter one of those, unlike the clickers, it's in quite a bright location during daytime. And it doesn't really lend it the same menace that it could. And you see them in the sequel as well. And they are more menacing there. But I think the introduction we see at the end of the trailer of the bloater is just absolutely terrifying.
You're right that they felt cartoony and I wouldn't say out of place, but they felt they stood out in the game, in the world of the game, compared to
They
the
remind you you're in a video game.
exactly. It was like, I forget if it was the game itself or the manual or some piece of literature or media that was like, we have runners, we have clickers, and then we have bloaters, like small, medium, large, good, better, best, whatever Apple parlance. Like it
Yeah,
feels
exactly.
like regular, pro, ultra. It felt like one of the few video gamey things about The Last of Us was that there is this giant monster boss thing that would show up every so often and be a little bit cartoony, but you're absolutely right. In the show, it looks terrifying, horrifying. The fact that it's not a video game means they can change up the design of the evil zombie things without changing the structure of the game, because it doesn't mean that there needs to be like a mini boss 5 episodes in that needs to be in line with the rest of the structure of the game. It can be a one-off terrifying monster thing like we see in Last of Us 2. I wish the first Last of Us had more of the, I think it's called Rat King in Last of Us 2. That was my favorite thing the game has ever done. And the fact that the show looks this terrifying indicates to me that, again, like we'd said earlier, Druckmann is swinging for the fences and doing new things that the structure of a game limited them from.
Right, because The Last of Us is it's definitely not a horror game, but there are certainly scenes, there are sequences that lean into that horror aesthetic. They want to create a sense of dread in you, get your adrenaline up, get you chewing through your ammo a little faster than you otherwise might, just to really heighten those moments. And then that kind of balances out with the slower moments as you're wandering through the kind of the more beautiful scenes where nature has reclaimed, the towns and cities.
Yeah, the design of the locations in both the show and the game look incredible. I saw some Twitter thread where they compared the scene from the game to the scene in the show, and it looks one to one. It looks beautiful. That's something they didn't have to change. One of the things that indicated to me, Last of Us will never be adapted because it doesn't need to be. It's already been made as a movie. You can just play through the movie. But in the show, it's going to be absolutely beautiful and incredible. When it comes to the characters and the small moments between zombie attacks. First of all, you're right. This is 20 years after the events of the initial outbreak and the apocalypse and everything breaking down. This is not The Walking Dead where the characters are trying to figure out what is going on as you're watching the show. This is characters who have lived in this universe for 20 years and understand everything there is to about it until one day Ellie shows up and breaks their entire worldview. Everything changes for them in that moment 20 years afterwards. And so when we see the horrifying moments of both humans and zombies kind of like playing off of each other, I think about my least favorite parts of The Walking Dead, which I only watched a season and a half of, which was, but what if the real villains are the humans instead of the zombies?
I think you're totally right. That's kind of a trope that The Last of Us, it's fully aware of, and it doesn't lean into at any point. The humans are the things to be afraid of. The infected are really just a force of nature. They're out there, like snakes and spiders and anything else. Like, you got to be careful of them, but like they're kind of a known quantity. It's the humans that are constantly surprising you and can't be trusted.
Yeah, exactly. And when there's a bit in the second game from a gameplay perspective where you have to get through a zone, you have to get through a room, and there's infected and humans, and you can fight both, Or you can just kind of stealth through and let everyone else kill each other. And that was one of the
Yeah, it's a great
smartest things
sequence.
that either game did, because you're able to see this moment of, I can let these two forces of nature that are combating each other and butting heads, I can let them do whatever they want and I can move through itself. And you know, you're right with force of nature. The zombies are the infected. They're not actually zombies, but the infected don't have any sort of society or infrastructure or anything. It just kind of hobble around. And that's kind of the unnatural, unhuman thing about them that makes them so scary to look at.
Is there anything else we need to cover before we wrap up our episode zero?
Ben, I would like to nominate for you a mushroom of the week, a fungus of the week, if you will. Ben and I were talking and
Excellent.
decided that in the theme of The Last of Us and the fungal outbreak, we decided we would honor our real-world mushrooms by bringing them and featuring them on the show to really show to the public that mushrooms are our friends. They're delicious. They're edible. They're not going to kill you. They're not going to turn you into an infected creature. So we wanted to honor them by bringing a mushroom of the week. And Ben, are you ready to hear mine?
I'm almost ready, but I think we should just clarify. When you say real world mushroom of the week, I expect no such limitations. Any and all mushrooms are on the table.
Good, because I was going to make a joke and say that I was going to bring the Mario mushroom this week, because we talked about the video game so much and the
Perfect.
Mario movie. I would like to nominate the mushroom in Mario that makes Mario grow twice as tall, and you can actually see his defined features. He jumps a little bit higher, and he gives one extra hit point. The traditional red white spotted mushroom. I would like to nominate that for our mushroom of the week in honor of the video game discussion that we just had.
It is an iconic mushroom. Obviously, mushrooms are very much tied to the entire lore of Mario. It would not be complete without them, I suppose.
I'm curious how the movie's going to play it off. Is it like there's going to be a drug joke in there that's going to go over the heads of kids, but adults are going to chortle?
Of course. I mean, if there was any mushroom that's going to give you superpowers, well, yeah, we know what those are.
And there can't be an animated movie for kids anymore without like raunchy double entendre jokes for the parents and the
Risque
adults in the
jokes,
room.
yes.
Ben, this was so
100%.
much fun. Episode zero of The Cast of Us here on The Incomparable. Thank you so much for joining. I'm excited to keep talking to you.
Thank you. I cannot wait till we can actually dig into this show.
And to those of you out there in podcast land, thank you so much for listening. We are on The Incomparable. Come join us in the members Discord. It's a really fun time. There's lots of really good people there. Or talk to us on Twitter or Mastodon, or send us a carrier pigeon wherever we may be at that point. Talk to you soon, Ben.
Talk to you soon.